on the other screens and do it.
So welcome, and then I'll just turn it over to the host.
So first of all, thank you all for showing. I'm very sorry I couldn't be there, but I didn't find out. I thought everything was going to be hunky-dory, and then they announced that we'd be running till like 4, which was late, but I could still make it. Then yesterday they said, oh no, we're going to be running till late. Well, we got through 69 bills today, and we managed to finish by 6:30. But next week we plan to go from till 8 p.m. every night. So that's going to be the real challenge that we have. So just a couple of brief things, and then I'll be open for questions. My mind is still stuck in a lot of bills because I make notes on them, I print them off, I take them in with me. By the time I actually get on the floor, I know which way I'm going to go almost always. Or if I have a question, it's normally answered during the question and answer, if there is any, or if there's debate. I know when you look at it, it sometimes looks a little crazy. We even suspended rules at the end of today for the last hour and a half. Normally voting is open for 2 minutes. They dropped it to 1 minute. And so if there are no questions, we can get through a bill in slightly under 2 minutes, including all the what are called readings, all the questions and all the formalities to make sure that we actually do that. But we also went through quite a few yesterday because our options were to either not work as late and drop a bunch of bills or try to do bills. One important thing about bills for you to think about is we will often pass a bill that doesn't actually have what's called a title on it. And the reason we do that is it can have a fiscal impact. First of all, a bill has to have a title in order for it to be become state law. And that's a constitutional issue. We do what's called striking the title, and you can tell if a title has been struck just by looking at how the bill is displayed online. And if it has little square brackets around the title's been taken off. And we talk about it being struck or taken off. At that point, it can't become law. It means people can continue to work on it. But for it to become law, it still has to be passed by both chambers, so it means we're going to see it again. So you'll see people vote for bills that you think they might be against, but what they're doing is they're giving the author a chance to go out and rework the bill to see if they're to solve any problems that are in it, see if they can garner some more support. And sometimes those bills never show back up. You know, that's the one and only. The reason we do that is it keeps them alive for this session. It doesn't have to go into another session. Of course, once we finish the bills here, they then go over to, this week and next week is what's called deadline week. All bills have to pass out of their house of origin, whether you're in the Senate or you're in the House. Then we go through hearings and everything else in the committees again, then we bring in the bills from the other chamber for us to hear and talk about. And at the end of the day, for a bill to become law, the House and the Senate must vote on the exact same language. So if there's any negotiation, it then has to go back. And so towards the end of the session, you'll see a lot of this. You'll see a lot of things where it looks like we're just rushing through them, but they've been negotiated and everything else. Having said that, it's been a rather long day, but I'm so pleased you're all here. I'm going to go ahead and open this up for questions.
It's unmuted. It's a free-for-all, however you want to go.
Yeah. My name is Rick Gardner. I'm kind of representing the Lions Clubs in the local area.
I'm sorry, I can't hear that. Can you move a little closer?
I'm sorry, Rick. Here we go. I'll just trade seats. Why don't you come on up here? We'll do it that way.
The local Lions Clubs and the Lions Clubs throughout the state have adopted a high-tech machine that we use to scan the eyes of kindergarten through third grade students. We do this for the schools, but we've come across a problem with state statute in that for kindergarten, second, and third grade, they require the old method, the legislation currently requires the old method, you know, where you actually block one eye and just do it by eye chart. Well, we've gotten around this by doing our vision camera along with a physical person there with the eye chart, and 9 times out of 10, this high-tech machine picks up a lot more deformities and things that need attention for the children. So I'm told, now, you may have passed these today, I don't know, but I'm told that there's a bill in the House and the Senate, House Bill 1372 and Senate Bill 803, child. It's non-invasive. Mm-hmm. It just looks at the eyes, comes back and detects at least 8 to 10 deformities. And then we print out a statement to the parents saying, take your child in, show them what we found, and have the optometrist or whoever to confirm that they have this issue. And so I'm asking your support on that bill to see that it gets passed. You can work with your colleagues. That would really help out the Lions Club in getting more eye screening done for the elementary children.
Okay. 1372 is not yet eligible to be heard on the House floor. I just checked that out. Thank you for that. And by the way, if you're not familiar with it, this is the way advocacy works.
Go ahead, keep talking.
So, I see hands moving. Can I go ahead and talk? Give me a thumbs up. Okay. but this is the way advocacy works. Somebody will call and they'll tell me, you know, they suggest that I support a bill. And so I just wrote down these. I haven't seen them go across because I would have recognized the eyesight discussions that came across. So yes, we will support anything. We've been doing a lot of things that have actually helped modernize, whether it's a criminal justice system that have helped modernize what we had. One interesting bill we passed today requires, if you're in a car and you see flashing amber lights from like a Class A wrecker, you have to move over. Now, the question was, one of our representatives said he's colorblind. How would he know if it's red and, you know, it's flashing amber? And the whole thing is, this is building up to the point where we want to, you know, basically make sure that if you see flashing lights on the side of the road, you go ahead and move over, pull over, you don't go screaming by them at full highway speed. So it wouldn't apply just to stop highway patrol officers. And so that was a request bill, and it all starts with somebody coming and advocating for it. Now, what I do when I get that is, you know, many things are commonsensical, like this one for the eyesight. However, other things, I have to dig into it just a little bit more depth to find out what's going on other sides. And what I will tell people, I had a conversation today with a pharmacist who has been elected about PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers. These are like the big CVSs and everything else. And he was asking my support on the bill. Got to tell you, it looks like a really good bill. And so what I told him is, A, nobody's come to talk to me about the other side. B, just from everything I've seen, the little bit of research I've done, it looks like a good bill. And so right now I'm inclined to support it. And if I change my mind, I will come, or if I hear anything that might incline me to change my mind and support before it comes up on the floor, I will go talk to him about that. And so I'm always looking for more information about bills. I'm looking for valid information that comes in that helps us make a decision on the bills.
Okay.
That help?
I'll just, when you guys come up, I'm just going to tell him that too. So Darryl, okay, so what I've done is I've just asked people when they come just to mute and unmute the microphone so we don't get the horrible feedback that's going on, so that you can have a conversation at the same time. Okay?
I understand that there's a Senate Bill 803 that has the same language as House Bill 1372. Is it up to me to get with Julie Daniels on that, or are bills made it after they come through committees, or how does that process work if it's attending to the same issue?
When it's attending to the same issue, eventually one bill will disappear or just be laid to one side, and we'll choose to work with the other bill. But if you're concerned that it would not get out of committee, then it wouldn't hurt to just let Julie know about her Senate bill. And you may have heard her say this on the radio, and I will say this as well, is sometimes bill numbers don't help. I didn't actually pay attention to bills until they actually came through committee, because unless they come out of committee, they're not live rounds. And so it's helpful when you give a bill number, also tell what the topic is.
I'll just add very quickly to what he said. As an elementary teacher, I really appreciate the Lions Club coming in. I can count over the last 10 or 15 years 20 or 30 children that they've caught eye issues and been able to send them. So I would fully support any bill that would help them be able to do that for our students.
And so I'm very hopeful that we will actually get through these things, because if you watch, most bills pass almost unanimously or near unanimously. You know, you'll see like 97-3. It's very seldom that we actually end up with everybody in the chamber. And sometimes things move so fast that if you step out, by the time you come back, they've gone through two additional bills. But, you know, they'll pass 97-3, 90-10, or something like that. And so most things that we do actually have broad bipartisan support. Something like that, somebody will stand up and explain it. Somebody may or may not ask a question, which slows us down. But, you know, that's part of the job that they do. Sometimes it's up for debate. That one I would expect it to be a very brief explanation, and people will say, oh, yeah, we should have been doing this. Because everybody's in there trying to make Oklahoma better. And we, you know, one of the things I think that really kind of struck me is that so much of what we do is behind the scenes work that most people will never ever hear about. But incrementally, it solves problems. And as time moves on and things that we do right now turn out not to be something beneficial for the future, some future legislature will come in and tweak them to help move those statutes forward. So, while somebody's thinking of the next question to come up, let me just touch briefly on some of the bills that we did for the, you know, to help the governor allow him to appoint some more, or to appoint the heads of five of the agencies. I don't recall them right off the top. But the way we restructured that, we're very concerned that whatever structure we have is good governance, regardless of which party happens to be in power, which party is trying to move forward. You know, as I've told people, we're not going to be North Carolina, we're not going to be Wisconsin looking like a power grab, you know, if they end up losing power. We do things that we want will be good governance for all. And what we did is basically he gets to appoint, the Senate gets to confirm, and he then has five members that he appoints to commission, and the House and the Senate each get to appoint two members. And the advantage is, at this point, we have somebody we can pick up the phone who's responsive to us about our issues. And of course, budgets have to start in the House, and so we also budget. Okay, go ahead. Next. I can actually hear you, so if you just move a little closer. Yeah.
This is Paul Stewart.
Right.
So I've got a so there was Senate Bill 950 that passed, and it's kind of evenly passed. It was the puppy mill bill. So I know that the Washington County SPCA and Animal Rescue Foundation Bartlesville have both come out against on the House side, it's House Bill 2149. Mm-hmm. And so for me, well, on a different topic, real quick, I want to say, I know that you guys almost unanimously passed the bill in the House that basically gives cities back control of city parks. Well, this other bill is kind of doing the opposite, where it's taking, you know, rights that the city has now to, you know, prohibit or regulate puppy sales or and cat sales in town. And it just prohibits it and says we can't do it, that the state is in charge of it. And from my perspective, the state doesn't really have any skin in the game there, because it's the city that has to deal with the stray animals and that type of stuff. And all the money that we have to spend on stray animals, we can't spend on sidewalks and bridges and police and firefighters. And voting no on it would maintain the status quo, where people could still, they could buy dogs and cats from breeders, they could rescue animals, or they could go to a city that allows cat and dog sales, which right now I think Bartlesville does allow it. But it's taking away some of the tools in our toolbox. And so, you know, the SPCA, ARF, and then me being on the city council, we kind of all want you to vote no on that one.
To vote no on 2149. Yeah. And I have seen that one go by, and that was my first thought, is why is the city regulating what happens with the city limits? Because to me, it read like my next door neighbor could set up a puppy farm and I could have yapping puppies in the back dog. Nothing you can do about it.
Well, that was something I'd asked when Governor Stitt was in town last fall when he was running, because I've kind of seen this over the year where the legislature has taken kind of rights out away from the cities and out of their toolbox, and he was pretty adamant and, you know, quickly said, no, he was for local control of, you know, things that happen.
So that bill, let me just take a quick look at this one because I'm looking at the bill that I had here. Oh, they've been an amendment. Oh, this is by Pfeffer. I did see that. I don't know if it's going to be heard. So we'll have to actually see where that comes from. Part of it is having your other cities contact the folks. Matter of fact, I got a, I'll have to look up the bill, but I put it in my notes. I got emails from two city managers and a police chief. One city manager came to see me to go, you know, to vote against the bill. And so with my notes that I've created for that bill, when I open it up, that will remind me, oh, that's what I want to vote against, because it was taking away some of the things that they needed to do to maintain their cities properly. Oh, I'm sorry, it's a different bill. That was the one that was doing the public safety districts, and they all think it's a very good idea, and you may have heard of that and think it's a good idea.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So now that we've legalized medical marijuana, I know the legislature is trying to come up with the rules as quickly as possible. And as a school board member, I'm kind of watching going, all right, we need to come up with policy, but we're kind of trying to figure out what that policy needs to be. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the legislation that I believe passed and just kind of give us your perspective on it. And in particular, I'm thinking about, as an employer, what we need to be regulating when it comes to our employees.
Well, as you know, I was one of the few who voted against the Unity bill. And the reason I did that is, as I told people, we talk about local control. We also talk about the ability to, you know, I think the fact that the people went out and voted for something as a statute, that while we could change it, I think it's very important that we actually allow it to run for at least one session. And I thought it was a bit unseemly for us to go out to immediately try to change it, because it sent the message, y'all didn't really know what you're doing. We really know best. But there's a reason we have the initiative petition, initiative referendum. On something like that, I would have much rather said let it go for a year. I will tell you, I've heard from employers about the whole issue of how they handle it. The original statute is passed, allowed you to, you know, it basically prohibited taking the marijuana, having it with you or taking it while you're at work. But you could still use it. And the big thing it did is it kept you from using the presence of marijuana for disciplinary action. And they've kind of gone back and then kind of eased that back in. I would have preferred to have had somebody come to me and say, listen, this is the problems that we've had, but nobody did. And I actually asked for that. And, you know, the lobbyists who were lobbying for it, the fact that they didn't turned out to be, I think, informative in and of itself. The other thing, of course, is if you're a renter, they blanket banned smoking in rental houses, or not smoking, any growing of plants in rental houses. They also banned smoking. You can extend that from tobacco. But unlike almost everything else that you do as a landlord, where if you don't want somebody to do something, you prohibit it in there, they just went ahead and did a blanket prohibition, which is totally different from the other kinds of regulation. I kind of find it ironic, since we push deregulation and making and really helping grow our businesses, that in something like this, we really have an awful lot of regulation that's going to increase costs, going to make it difficult for people to get into the party or get into the business. We'll see how it shakes out. We've got some more bills coming in to do some tweaks. But that's where we are on that. Does that answer your question?
I think so. So we've basically been erring on the side of it's federally illegal. So we're going to lean on that for right now until we kind of figure out what's going on.
And I think that's a really good thing. If you're doing things where it's still illegal in the federal, you want to do that. For those who haven't looked at it, the problem with marijuana is that there is no quick test to tell impairment, other than physical types of tests. Can you do task X or task Y? And if you can stop, you don't actually have to do that. You know, if the police officer asks you to do something, now they can take you to jail, but then they would have no evidence that you're actually impaired, you know, unless they were able to observe other factors.
Brian Davis.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Doing well. Can you give us an update on House Bill 26, 21? Actually, I don't have to give you the title on that one.
You heard about this one once or twice?
Yeah, there's a, I think somebody wrote me about it, suggested Well, actually, I've had a few people write and say vote for it. I've had a few people write and vote against it. I've got to tell you, of all the things that have caused a kerfuffle, that's one that has caused a kerfuffle. Here's where we are with that. There is a, for those who don't know, that is the Opportunity Scholarship Program. As a brief rundown of the previous program, you could donate, what was it, up to $2,000 as an individual and get a 50% tax credit, and you donate on what were called SGO, Scholarship Granting Organizations, and get a 50% tax credit from the state. So it's like, ooh, $1,000 off my taxes by giving you $2,000, sweet. That was capped at $3.5 million. Then there was an additional $1.5 million that went to Educational Improvement Granting Organizations, EIGOs or IGOs. Same sort of thing, you could give money to them, except those were things that could be granted to schools. And this all sounds good. Look, you give money, you set it up properly, money goes to your local school. The problem that we've run into it when I really started looking into the Opportunity Scholarship, the whole goal of the Opportunity Scholarship is if you don't have good educational opportunities in your school, and I've talked, you know, over the past few years, I've talked to schools throughout the state, I've talked to parents throughout the state. Yeah, there are some schools that really shouldn't exist, you know, and that don't serve their kids as well. And so what do you use for the opportunity? Well, that was the Opportunity Scholarship. The problem that I found is there was a promise of savings because you take money, you take kids out of the system, so you then don't have to support them at the regular public schools, and they'll be done by the private schools. Well, I went through and determined those numbers that they were used were totally bogus, and I can explain some other time why that is. Since then, and since I pointed out, they've come back, they've done some more research on how that should look, and they've kind of determined that based on their analysis, if 30%, about 30% of the kids came from public school and went to private school, then it's a break-even proposition. I've tried to get more information, but I haven't heard from the professor since they last wrote to them. So I'm not quite sure where they are in their analysis. My problem is in almost all those cases, I then start asking, how much is a scholarship? And I've got a report that shows it's, you know, some are $3,000, some are a little bit more. Most cases, people have a copay that they do. And so if you're a parent, you go in and maybe you get a scholarship to go to a private school, but you're expected to pony up $300 a month per child, maybe $500, maybe $200. The lowest I've heard was $20. And, you know, I'll tell you, the people who are involved in these, they're not trying to take money away from public schools intentionally. What their goal is to serve children, you know, and most of them are very sincere. You know, just like school teachers, you want to serve children, you want to make them better. But I can't get over the fact that you still have to have people who will take money out of their pocket, and as a private school, you don't have to take people. Lowest copay I've heard of is $20, but I haven't seen any evidence that that actually happens, that people are actually, you know, being charged such a low value. So how do people move forward with that? That's the way it currently is. The new bill took that $5 million limit, remember the $3.5 million and the $1.5 million, took it up to $60 million. The Senate side was $80 million. Well, in the Senate side, they cut it down to $20 million. And I think I just saw there's an amendment going by, I don't have it right in front of me, that I think cut it down to $25 million each. So IGOs would have $25 million and SGOs would have $25 million. The whole goal is, we give you more money to do public schools if you'll let us go out and serve some of these other children. Now, playing in the background is a bill that I actually signed on, that asked for more accountability and reporting. Things like, what is the copay? Where does it go? How much is it? You know, what is a free and reduced lunch population of the people you're serving? Because we really don't have that. There's also another one that lowered that cap. And one thing you may not know is that if you're a family of four, you're eligible for the scholarship if you make $139,000 a year or less as a family of four. You know, two adults sending the two children to school. So I know a lot of people that with $139,000 a year, sending your kids to daycare, get a little $4,000, you go to the region school, which is where Kevin Stitt's kids go. And so what you're paying for high quality daycare could then be your copay to go into these high dollar schools. So they're bringing that down. Now the title is off. I remember I talked about the title off is off earlier, and they want to bring it back through. So one of the questions is, what do we do when it comes back through? Because there are also, understand that not only do we have the partisan issues that go, that happen in the chamber, nothing becomes law unless it goes through the Senate. The Senate has different priorities than the House. And so you always have this negotiation going on between the Speaker and the pro tem, trying to figure out what they're going to do. And so it becomes horse trading. And so we all get swept up in this. I will tell you, I did suggest to the Speaker that he probably needs to whip that bill. And by whipping, that's just the term for going out and counting how many votes you have. Sorry, I went on a little bit long, but did that answer your question?
Knowing the title's off is basically what I need to know at this point.
Yeah, the title was actually removed in committee. Let me just clarify. They said they would remove it in committee because of the way you removed the title. They couldn't actually remove it until it went to rules. And now I think I saw there was actually an amendment that would remove the title. So if it gets heard on the floor, first thing you do is hear the amendment and you remove the title.
Darrell, I believe this gentleman stood up and had a question.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, my question is on a bill that already passed, and you voted for House Bill 2597. Dealing with the guns and Governor.
Oh.
Could you explain? I have some uncertainty about that bill and that law. Could you kind of explain why it passed, or what's the benefit to the state on that bill? And it's not revenue neutral, I understand. So there's going to be some revenue loss. I've heard $4 million in lost fees from that. I don't know if that's correct, but anyway, I'll sit down and you can speak to that.
Yeah, 2597. Sorry, I forgot about that one, because you know that was at least a week and a half ago, if I can remember that far back. Yes, 2597. That was the one that basically allowed for, people call it untrained carry. I think it was permitless carry. Other people call it constitutional carry. I'm not quite sure why, because there was nothing that prevented a state from doing this at any point in history. The reason, there were two things that were going on. First, understand that this has been building for years, that they've been pushing on this and going after it for years. You've heard about the NRA going after it. This bill that came through, recall last year there's a bill that passed, both chambers went to the governor's desk and she vetoed it. Well, stood on the campaign trail, stood right up and said, by golly, I'm going to sign that. And so as a show of good faith and working with the governor, of course, the speaker and the pro tem, both fresh bills forward. The reason for our bill in the House is to maintain prohibitions in place where you can carry guns. And you may have noticed that we passed a follow-up to it that also allows parks to prohibit where guns are carried, which would, you know, cover the gathering place and other places. Or, excuse me, open carry, so that somebody could carry a gun, but it would be concealed. Have that bill failed? And one of the things I wanted to do is I thought, well, if we're going to do that, we should, you know, take the Capitol and allow people to carry their guns in there, because, I mean, we work in there. Why wouldn't we do that for everybody else? So I'll tell you, I had a nice chat with the majority leader. You know, when I said, well, I'd like to file this amendment, he said, look, here's what's going to happen. If you do that amendment and that amendment gets accepted, the bill would die in the Senate. And I now know, you know, I'm 100% convinced that if we just opened up one, it would die in the Senate. Because over in the Senate is another bill that, oh, allows anybody to carry, and oh, doesn't have any prohibited places. So universities and law enforcement were really against that one. Universities were neutral on this other one, and law enforcement, they weren't actively opposing with, because they could live with it. They assume anybody they run into right now has a gun anyway. And so if the bill coming out of the House did not pass overwhelmingly in its current form, it would die in the Senate, and then they'd bring the other bill and force that on the House, which, knowing my compatriots, would end up getting voted with at least 51% of the vote, 51 votes, and would then go down to the governor. And so it was one of these, you know, one of these things that's very difficult to navigate, but that was kind of what went on with that. Did that answer your question?
I think so.
So you voted for the lesser of the evils, kind of.
Lesser of two evils.
Okay.
The bill was going to pass anyway. There was no point in voting against it because it was going to pass anyway. And there's still a lot of power out there in terms of, you know, you want to talk about a hot button issue, that's it. And basically, in everything I've seen, it doesn't change public safety that much. Now, I've started to see some other information coming out, but I don't know the numbers yet. We'll find out.
Well, I guess the one part of my question, what about the revenue? There was some lost revenue as a result because you had less permitting fees, correct?
There'd be less permitting fees. I got to tell you, somebody came into my office with her three daughters, one in a stroller, and her plea for it, and I heard this from several people, was how expensive it was to get a license. Buy a gun, let's find the license to be expensive. And she said she had to wait until a year after her husband got it because they just couldn't afford the fee, which was $100, $150 or something like that. My thought, of course, is that if you, and then I asked what she carried the gun with, what she used to conceal carry for, she says, oh, you know, when I'm out in public so I can stop things if they happen. I was kind of wondering what world she was living in because, you know, it's not where we are here, but that's how she saw it. As you all know, the statistics on guns in the home are more likely to be used on somebody who lives in the home and used in the home than they are for personal defense.
Representative, one of the agencies that's making that claim of lost revenue is the OSBI. They are saying that it's going to be a multi-million dollar loss to an agency that is already starving for funding. Have you looked at that, sir, to see if that is actually the case from your mind? And if so, what ideas would you have to make sure that the OSBI is funded at the level to ensure public safety?
Well, what we have to do is, you're right, I have not dug deeply into that particular issue because this thing was coming through. Budget has not been complete yet. We haven't really, while we started budget, we've been kind of pulling things in. The whole idea is we really have to fund agencies at the level where they can do public safety. So I think it's incumbent on us to come up with a difference in the fees that they were collecting to make sure that they're able to follow with public safety, of course. Without collecting those fees, they're also not putting a little bit of personnel into it. So we do need to make sure that we do fund them.
Thank you, sir.
Daryl, Dan?
Yes.
Over here.
Hi, can't see you.
Okay. I have a follow-on question, or mostly a comment, and it's broader than fees and fines and parks. It has to do with Oklahoma image. I know we're now one of 14 or 15 states now that have this, what I call, lack of oversight on the use of guns. And I'll say it right now, I have a gun and all that stuff. I use it for hunting, etc. So I'm not anti-gun. But I am concerned every time we go down this road of what I consider to be backwards, the rest of it, and we're at the same time we're out trying to recruit people to come to Oklahoma, companies, smart companies with smart people from places like California, the coast, let's face it, that's where the technology jobs come from. And they see Oklahoma, and just like they looked at our education system, they also look at the social environment in which people will be living. And to me, this is just another reason why companies don't come to Oklahoma. I know I don't have any data to prove that, but it certainly doesn't help our image as a state, which is bad enough already. And we just keep digging ourselves in a hole every time we go down these roads, which we cannot see this, you know, we're working at cross purposes, in my opinion. That's my statement, and I don't want you to do anything. I just want you to be cognizant of that. I want Oklahoma to grow as much as you and the governor and all the rest. but by gosh, let's think these things through and the impact that they have. It may be superficial, we may have a wonderful climate, we may be in the middle of the nation, blah, 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 but we do, you know, we shoot ourselves in the foot with this kind of stuff.
No, I was trying to do it.
You know, I certainly hear you on that one, and I have wondered about the disparity between, it's a little bit like talking about federal overreach all this time, and then we pass laws that affect, you know, that take away local control of cities, right? And prohibit you from doing something. You know, we have a split personality, what can I say? And I don't think anybody's ever thought about that because we do a lot of things in isolation.
Thank you for listening.
Darrell, where are we on budget negotiations, and will schools have their budgets before April 1st?
Wasn't that sure the only time we've done it in like the last decade? I don't know where we are right now. We're trying to get through these through the next week. The speaker has promised that we will be involved in the budget negotiations. I haven't seen that yet, but I also know how, you know, we'll get some notifications of how to bring it in. As you can tell, there's been a lot going on, and remember, every one of us up there spent a lot of time knocking on doors, and we've knocked on doors in different parts of the states. In some parts of the state, you know, I was with one rural lawmaker who said, yeah, she said people were wondering, you know, thought teachers kind of overstepped. They thought, yeah, it's great that they got a pay raise, but, you know, they didn't like the way they went around it. I only heard that a few times. I heard much stronger support for education. And so where the $1,200 came from for the pay raise, I'm not quite sure. I think that's because is what STIP was pushing, right? But part of it is we also need to show that we're moving forward. I expect we'll see money for the classroom and a pay raise, but we don't know how that's actually going to shake out at the end of the day, because the pay raise went through with the title law, as do all budget bills right now. They get negotiated at the end.
Have you met anyone from OEA yet?
Excuse me,
have
what?
Have you met anyone from the Oklahoma Education Association yet?
Yes, I have. Matter of fact, they called me on a session again today to ask me where I was on 2621. That's losing track of the numbers. And I told them, I said, well, here's where we are. And I said, there may be reasons that it ends up leaving the House, but I, right now, just talking to people, I don't foresee it actually ending up in statute at any point. And if it leaves the House, it will be with the title law, which means it has to come back around.
Speaking toward the budget, and I know I've had this conversation with you before, but I just want to reiterate it every time I see you. I still think one of our major issues in education right now is pipeline. We've got to do something to get those younger teachers, the kids like my daughters, that who want to be teachers, to stay in the state of Oklahoma. So I don't know what that is. I don't know where the money is. That's kind of your job. So I just want to keep putting that in front of you and letting you know that we need more incentives to get people to go into the field and to stay, because that report that most of the teachers are 54 to 59 should put the fear of God in everyone that is involved with education, because every one of those teachers are 80 and out and are within a year or two or already eligible to retire. And that's going to create a huge void, more so than we already have. I feel like that's something that we need to make sure we keep pushing to the forefront and keep it on the governor's mind, keep it on the House leadership's mind, so that we can hopefully find some way to manage that issue.
I totally agree. I'm concerned about the lack of teachers that we have in the pipeline right now. The fact that we don't have so many teachers who are even willing to get into that. And this is all universities. I haven't looked at the nationwide supply, but with everything you've seen in the news throughout the nation, the question is, why would you get into teaching if you've been paying attention to it? You have to really want to. You really have to love it. And I also had to explain to somebody that the reason teaching has changed over the past 40 or 50 years also has to do with the fact that there's more opportunities for women out there, you know, as, in terms of actually being able to go out and find alternate jobs. So people who go into teaching, for them, that's a passion. But you have to be able to make money at it, too. And that's something that we haven't been very good at here. So we want to make sure that we're able to actually get to the point where we're able to bring in those new teachers. I'm concerned about the 3,000, what is it, almost 3,000 certificates, emergency certs that we have. One of the things that they've done to kind of alleviate it is encourage people to stay in longer. They've also done things that would encourage, if you retire, to be able to come back and do some teaching for a little bit longer as they work on that. But you're right, that's something we have to work on. I don't think it's really gotten to the hot button issue yet. And people are very aware of it. I know the superintendent, state superintendent, is pushing it too.
Well, to give you one statistic to work on, I'm a Southeastern Oklahoma State University graduate out of Durant. The year I graduated in December of 94, there were over 100 elementary ed majors. That's not even counting the secondary majors that graduated that year. I called them before the walkout last year, and in the spring they had 33 total student teachers. Nine of them already had jobs lined up in Texas before they graduated.
And didn't I just see Texas did another $5,000?
Yes, you did.
Well, the problem we've run into is we actually kind of have a revenue problem, you know, because we have good times, you party, you cut taxes, bad times, it comes and catches us. I think one of the things that's come out of this is some analysis that I've heard, and I haven't actually gone back and gone to the source, but I've heard it from, you know, leadership around here, is that if we passed the step-up plan on the first attempt, we would have ended up with $150 million more this year that we could work with. We don't have that. It's going to be a struggle to continue to grow. I don't think you're going to see us really cutting taxes as we move forward with this, but we've got to get to the point where we're actually able to do that and compensate. And I think there are a couple of things that we need to do. One is, I had somebody tell me, well, we spend 50% of our money on education, that's way too much. That's not strictly true, because we actually do what are called off-the-top appropriations. For example, flexible benefit allowance and the teacher retirement is off the top. So we don't actually appropriate that each year. Now, it would help us if we were to do that, because then we could take credit for it, right? We're doing good things for people. But it's a terrible idea, because that's how all the states have gotten into problems, is they've actually taken all their pension plans and, you know, don't have quite enough money. We'll just delay putting in $10 million here and $5 million there. Pretty soon, you're way out of whack. So we need to be able to fund those. The other thing is, we need to have a good conversation about what school looks like. And I think I've told several of you this, but as you think about schools, one of the problems is, how do you help legislators understand how schools are adapting and changing to meet the needs of the future and what they will take? Because every one of us can go out and find a school that's not doing well and point to that particular school. And if you don't come up with some solutions, as we're talking about funding, well, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, then it becomes a lot harder to sell it. And I, you know, as I've talked with people, there are a lot of conservative think tanks. There are a lot of people who subscribe to things that come out of that, and people, they write position papers. And one of the position papers, of course, is class size doesn't matter. So when you're going up and asking for class size, and they've got this other paper, they may not directly ask you about it, but they're going to ask what class size matters, you know, whether class size matters or not. And they may not discuss that with you, but they'll discount whatever you say unless you have something that shows them how that works. And if you talk to legislators about this, one thing I was thinking about, I think it would be very helpful if you just ask where they are in education. You know, what do they think needs to be done? And then start it as a reasonable conversation about what they think needs to be done. And one of the difficulties is thinking statewide. What does it mean to touch every school and improve every student and not just the ones in the districts you're familiar with? And that's a really hard thing to do if you've never had experience doing that. But if you ask them how they think about it, that can give you some ideas.
Daryl?
Yes.
This is Dan again. I brought a question from my wife, not related to education. Oklahoma Parks. Back when we were wringing our hands about the state budget not having enough money to go around, there was discussion of closing some state parks and discussion even of privatizing them, selling them off. Is my question is general. Is do you? I don't think there's any bills in the hopper that get at the specific issue. What is there? Have you picked up on anything that senses that these state resources are on, or some of them at least, maybe on thin ice in terms of sold off, closed, whatever?
No, I haven't. And maybe I'm clueless, but I haven't heard that. I haven't seen any bills that have actually made it out of committee that have done that. Remember, you've got a huge new crop of new legislators in here. What is it, 46, 47 in the House? And if you think about that, that's almost half. And so if we were all to band together, it will change it changes what happens. And so leadership is trying to make sure that we're all very involved, that we're knowing what's going on. But so in terms of that, I haven't heard that being on the table. I think part of the reason you don't hear that is that many of the people who were in the so-called platform caucus, platform referring to the Republican Party platform, their whole goal was to be purist and follow whatever that platform was, that were the platform caucus, ended up not winning re-election. And so we still have, a lot of very conservative members, but I think they're thinking about this in a different way. And I think the past few years have shown them that, maybe we have to think about this in a different way. As a matter of fact, one of the ways we're thinking about it, we just passed the ability for counties out of the House, don't know what'll happen in the Senate, for the ability of counties to levy 10 cents per ton on aggregate, caliche and other sorts of mined minerals that didn't have a severance tax before. And, that was a bill that was actually run by the Speaker last year. It was run by somebody else. We'll see how far it gets, because we believe that, if you're taking something that belongs, that's been here and it's been a legacy of all the people here, that you do owe something to the state for it.
Representative, did you say that has passed?
It came out of the House, yes.
Okay.
That was bill. We did it yesterday. How far it will go, I don't know. I'd have to look up the bill number. But it was run by Humphreys. Humphreys, the one who presented it, or Humphrey, rather.
I'm curious to that one because of the impact to Osage County, where the Osage Nation owns the mineral rights to any aggregate in that particular area. Is there, do you know off the top of your head if there's an exception for tribal land?
I don't. I'd have to go back and look at the bill. That did not come up during the debate on the floor.
Okay.
Now, there was the debate about if people would relocate from one county to the other, and it's like, come on, guys, it's 10 cents a ton. What's a ton going to cost you? $20, $25. It's 40, it works out to about 40 basis points. Your difference in cost of the different types of mines that you create more than makes up for that very small amount. And what we found is we mine the stuff, we don't tax it, it gets sold in Texas, they tax it when they sell it. It's like, that's not very smart on our part. And so this is something, and there's some restrictions in it, but that, counties have production mining facilities like that, they can actually use that.
After this session, would you mind, this is Nathan, by the way, Would you mind texting me that bill number so I can look it up tonight, sir?
Yeah, let me look that up.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Blake, I don't know if he can see you. We've got a gentleman over here, Daryl.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can only kind of see over to Nathan and...
Hello, I'm Craig Todd Bill, and I'm an independent pharmacist here in Bartlesville, and want to talk to you about, and they've already, may have already talked to you about this, because I came in a little
bit late.
House Bill 2632.
Yes, do you know Representative Marty?
Yes.
He owns a chain of pharmacies. He's out there pushing the bill. What I told him is nobody's contacted me in opposition to the bill. He did show me something that apparently got circulated and the independent pharmacists got together and showed why it was incorrect. As I told him right now, I'm inclined to vote for the bill. If I hear anything that would make me think differently, I would certainly tell him. But I think we need to make sure that our independent pharmacies are also able to compete on an even basis. And for those of you who don't know, do you want to just briefly explain what a PBM is?
What it is we want every Oklahoman to have the right to choose whatever pharmacy they want to, not their employer or not the insurance company. You know what I mean? Because right now, like Phillips, most people have to use CVS because they have that binding contract. You know what I mean? And so we're just basically trying to make sure freedom of choice. You know what I mean? That's it. You know, there's nothing big fancy about it. I mean, obviously, Walgreens and CVS. They don't want that, you know what I mean? And I'm sure the big, and that's what people really realize. Now, Walgreens owns insurance companies now, you know what I mean? And CVS owns insurance companies now. So it's not just that pharmacy. I'm not poo-pooing them, you know what I mean? They're business, they're fine, you know what I mean? But I understand why they want to monopolize that, basically, and not be able, anybody else to reach out and get any of that business, which, I live in America. I really do believe we need to have that freedom of choice. You know what I mean? And, it's like I've always said, yes, your employer pays a little, some of your insurance, but you also pay some of your insurance. But you don't have any right to say that you would like to go someplace else because your employer goes ahead and decides that for you sometimes. You know what I mean? Now, not for us, since I'm an independent pharmacy, but it's just one of those. What I'm saying about that.
And
I appreciate what you're saying. So,
one of the things that it does is it requires them to sell to independent pharmacists at the same prices to their own stores if you buy the same quantities.
Correct.
You know, so you can't, do a deep discount to your stores. I did a little bit of looking into PBMs, and one of the things I found is they sound great. People get together, they manage the benefits, they do bulk buying and everything else. It's not quite working out that way. Medicare is struggling with the whole concept. There's a lot of concern that it's actually driving costs up instead of driving the costs down.
Well, to me, a prime example of that is the governor lost transparency. Well, PBM, there's not very much transparent with them. You know what I mean?
Right.
It'd be nice if you knew where all that went, but you know what I mean? They don't want you to know all that stuff. So. Anyway.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Well, Daryl, we are at an hour, so.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm happy to stay here and talk with anybody however long they want. But I also understand it's late in the evening, and I get to hit the road after we get off this, so. Because I've got eggs and issues at 7:30 in the morning. That will be awesome. If you have anything, text me. By the way, if you tell anybody and you ask them to advocate and send an email or something, please tell them to put their address on, because I get so many, I've seen things that I swear come from Russian bots. I see things from people with Edmonds. I see things that look like made up names. It's helpful if it really looks like a real person. So. And one other thing, if anybody's into medical, the whole discussion between CRNAs and anesthesiologists is heating up. CRNA is a certified registered nurse anesthetist, and they're looking to not to be able to practice without necessarily having a supervising anesthesiologist. Anesthesiologists really don't like that, so I'm trying to figure out what this all means. So,
thank you for your time.
Thank you so very much. I really do appreciate that.
All right.
If you have any other questions, Nathan, you just come up and gather around and do whatever you wish if you need to. Okay?
Thank you, sir. I'll see you in the morning, but text me that tonight if you could, please.
Yeah, let me dig that up and I'll text it before I get on the road, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Or I'll email it to you, one of the two.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
So, thank you all. Thank you all for coming.
Okay.
Sorry I couldn't be there, but duty called.
Please take a look.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, Daryl, did you get my email?
It worked out, right?
Yes, thank you.